Hello, heroes. Welcome to Modifier. I'm your host, Megan Dornbrock. Last week's episode on the new 5th edition open gaming license has gotten some really great feedback and seems to be doing a good job as a primer on the announcement. I wasn't wrong when I said that we still have a lot of questions, and it sounds like you guys do too, which is good. There are lots of knowledgeable people at Roll20, Reddit, Wizards of the Coast, and even the OneShot Network who love talking about this stuff. But one thing we seem to have in common is that we are not lawyers, and there is definitely a legal angle to consider before you start getting published. To help with that, Modifier is officially soliciting your OGL-related legal questions to ask an actual real-life lawyer. If you're unclear on any of the finer points of that license, shoot your concerns our way and keep an ear out for the episode when Modifier gets a lawyer. You can find us as usual on Twitter and Tumblr and all of the social spaces at Modifier Podcast or modifierpodcast@gmail.com. And now, at long last, I'm happy to bring to you the Mass Effect Edge of the Empire episode we've been waiting for. I'm so happy for you to meet two of my favorite people, Richard and Kat, and to talk about this game that Richard has been working on. One last note, this interview was recorded quite a while ago and a little bit differently than the way current Modifier shows are recorded, so please forgive any roughness that I couldn't quite solve, and know that we have a better method moving forward. Thank you guys so much. Enjoy! Okay, so joining me today are Richard and Kat. Richard has been working on a Mass Effect mod for the Edge of the Empire system. And Kat, you may know because she makes our cool theme music. She's also his wife and a playtester. So it's very exciting that we get to talk to both of them at the same time. Thanks both of you for being on our show.
My show.
Woo.
Richard, have you tried doing anything like this before? Like modifying a game or making a game?
I've never done it with a tabletop RPG. I've made a couple of card games that are, I guess, similar to Magic the Gathering or the Pokemon trading card game, but
cool.
I've never done a pen and paper.
Okay. So you're coming from mostly playing with cards, making those kinds of games. Like, what kind of card games do you make? I'm curious now.
Well, when I was in high school, I actually made a card game. That was at my height of playing Magic and Pokemon and... Mm-hmm. Munchkin was also a game that was coming out around that time. And so I made this game where you play as people I knew. Everyone had their own card, and you had a series of attacks. And it combined the level 1 through 10 quality of Munchkin. It combined the hand and item playing of Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
And then the turn order, like Magic the Gathering. And it kind of just came together really well. And people were very receptive to it. And asked about getting themselves in the game if they weren't already cards. And that game actually has gone through two iterations. Once when I was working at a movie theater.
Oh, no.
Some of my close friends, we all got together and made a version of that game.
That's when I got my card. We weren't dating yet.
Oh, exciting.
Catherine got her card. And then
a big later, moment.
Yeah. And then later on, I made it of just all the friends I had post the movie theater, after working at the movie theater. So mm-hmm. That's kind of the final form of it right now. I even had a Facebook group where I would upload expansions to it, so.
Oh, cute. So they were flattering versions of friends you knew. No.
People who I knew who were playing the game typically got some flattering cards, but more often than not, it was tongue-in-cheek, even amongst friends.
Okay, nice.
It was mutually insulting and supporting.
As true friendships are, so.
Exactly.
Very cool. So, about this project that you're working on, there isn't an official Mass Effect role-playing game, like a tabletop role-playing game. The video game itself is a lot of things at once. You know, it's a third-person shooting game, it's an action RPG, that sort of thing. So, like, a role-playing game is in there, but it's definitely not usually at the top of the list of things that people describe it as. So, what's appealing about Mass Effect to you and to Kat as a setting for a tabletop role-playing game?
Well, I didn't really get into Mass Effect when the first game came out. It actually took me playing Dragon Age to realize what type of game that was. And then I went back to Mass Effect when Mass Effect 2 was coming out. All of my friends were excited to play it. Mm-hmm. And so I figured I needed to get a character ready for that. And after suffering through the first 3 hours of not being able to hit anything, found out that the game is a very enjoyable and immersive game. So then I was hooked and it hit its peak with Mass Effect 3, which I know people give the story some grief.
Mm-hmm.
The way it ended, and then the endings change and all that. But the multiplayer, I was obsessed with. And that sort of cooperative, team-based combat in this Mass Effect universe, I guess, was the spark for this, because I liked how people would go into the lobbies, and in our party, we'd be like, oh, who's going to be a Batarian? Who's going to be the Salarian? Do we need, like, a tank class? Is anyone going to be a Volus, once they had added those to the system? And so that kind of felt like a party getting ready to adventure, even though the multiplayer maps were very finite spaces. And then I was thinking that there's no reason that couldn't be carried over into the sort of more social and explorative setting that the RPG side of Mass Effect is known for.
Cool. Okay. And you definitely hit on some things there that speak to me as a video game player, sort of. I've tried playing Mass Effect, the first one. I did not get very far. Nice. I tried earlier this week. I was like, I'm going to play some more Mass Effect, and I'm going to call it Research. And I booted it up, and I don't remember where I was or what I was doing, but I keep dying. So how do I stop dying?
Yeah, that's the hard part.
Okay.
You have to wait a couple hours. Just griefing.
Nice. Okay, cool. I definitely looked up some cheats so that I would not die, but I still died. So that's exciting. But I definitely fell more for the Dragon Age side of BioWare games myself.
Same.
Yeah. They're a bit more traditional RPG than BioWare is, than Mass Effect is, but I feel like there's still, like, people love it for a reason. There's good story in there somewhere if I could just get past that barrier that everybody seems to be having at the beginning of this trilogy.
Exactly how I feel about it, and I think that's why I was excited he was doing this, because I am crap at games that involve shooting.
Yes.
But I can play tabletop, so I really liked the characters, and I was nicknaming them while he played, and it was fun, but I knew I couldn't play it, because I just get cranky and kind of rage out, so.
Yeah, so this is making it accessible for all of us who cannot play this shooter game. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure.
You're not the first to do this sort of thing. I did do a little digging, and there are a couple other Mass Effect hacks and mods of different systems, people using D6, D20, Fate. There's even some unofficial rules for the Age system, which is what Green Ronin Publishing bases. They have the official Dragon Age RPG, which is a super fun game. Some people have been modifying that rule set for a Mass Effect game. Did this come into play at all when you were conceiving this idea, or did you purposefully avoid other people's projects?
I'm not aware of other versions of it.
Cool.
It's one of those things where when you get to the internet, three people have already done anything you're going to put up there, so you just kind of have to stay true to your efforts and not get too worried about comparing and contrasting. But I've never really been exposed to a lot of systems. I've traditionally played the D20s, Dungeons & Dragons, Pathfinder. I guess the most exotic ones prior to Star Wars Edge of the Empire was the Pokemon tabletop.
Oh, my God.
And that
I haven't played this.
It's so fun.
It's incredibly broken.
It's brokenly wonderful.
It captures the Pokemon games feel of, oh, I have a super effective attack, I one hit kill everything.
I was an ice cream cone that killed everyone.
Oh, well, what more could you want from a game?
Coming from a pretty traditional D20 system and, like, you know, getting to the Edge of the Empire and seeing a system, as my friend Corey calls it, just the throw fun dice system. It's just getting a big pile of dice and tossing them. That was intriguing to me. It was different. It was something exciting. And then being in the Star Wars setting, it already had that sci-fi element. It had already addressed all the concerns you have when you're doing sci-fi. Vehicles, I guess, are the biggest difference between a traditional fantasy RPG and a space setting or a modern setting, I imagine. And I was really impressed by how similar all the interactions were. Nothing was specially set up to negotiate combat compared to communication or exploration. Everything used the very same, very simple interaction. And I really liked that, and it made things go very quickly. And I was playing it one day, and I was just like, this is a great fantasy, or this is a great sci-fi setting.
Yeah.
I'd love to make a Destiny MMO of this. And then I realized not everyone likes Destiny. So I was like, well, because the Destiny story is pretty much, I'm a guy with a gun and I shoot aliens. So that's as far as you're going to get on that.
Not a lot of relationship building or
being still caught up in the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer to this day, oddly enough. I'm really hoping Xbox One gets that backwards compatible and live soon.
Yeah.
That just it seemed like it'd be a perfect fit. And even sitting there playing the Star Wars game, I was just kind of thinking about how well that would work in a Mass Effect setting.
Awesome. So it's that, those similarities between like Star Wars and Mass Effect that made it such an easy transition and made Edge of the Empire like an appealing system to use it, as opposed to, say, the Pokemon role-playing.
Right. No, that was a big help. And it actually was easier on me because I didn't have to go flesh out everything from the beginning, because I could take what Star Wars' system, Fantasy Flight, did, mm-hmm. and I could say, well, the scientist in the Star Wars universe is going to be the same as the scientist in the Mass Effect universe. They might have some very specific differences, but those are really mm-hmm. small and minor.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, I'm a scientist, I'm good at technology, or I'm good at knowledge. It just made it real easy to bring them over.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking over the rule set that you guys sent and putting it side by side with Edge of the Empire, you can tell that there's really more similarities than I realized, just, you know, between the way the two worlds work, even.
Yes.
Lots of aliens. I liked all the alien descriptions. That actually helped a lot more than my attempts at playing the game so far. It's like, oh, that makes sense now. Okay. You know, like reading through what these aliens do and what they can.
I knew one of my friends was not overly familiar with the Mass Effect universe, mm-hmm. in addition to my wife. So I really wanted to make the rule book, or the PDF, this extra stuff. I wanted to have all that flavor text, because I knew some of my friends who were going to be getting this would be spending time reading it over, mm-hmm. and it's mostly just copy-paste off the Wikipedia, so...
Okay, I was going to ask.
Actually accurate as the Wikipedia is, so... But condensed in order to fit the formatting, which was mm-hmm. one of the biggest tricks of making that PDF. So,
yeah, just from a formatting and layout perspective, what'd you build that in?
Open Office.
Oh my God, Richard.
First decision I've ever made in my life, but it was the free decision.
That's true. I was gonna say, like, we need to introduce you to InDesign, but that's not free. It looks really good.
Thank you. That's MS Paint and OpenOffice.
It's wonderful, and one day when this is available for people to peruse, they will also see how beautiful this is. There's lots of very cool art, and it's laid out very similarly to the Edge of the Empire source books, yeah. which is awesome. I guess that kind of answers. We had one user question from Twitter that was, you know, how easy has it been to adapt so far? Which it sounds like fairly. So, what was the hardest thing about this project?
Aside from the formatting, the hardest thing was coming up with the biotic abilities, because in the Mass Effect universe, the biotic abilities are, as far as the games go, mm-hmm. strictly combat-based. You may have some cutscenes where you use the biotics to do something that's not combat, like, you know, moving an object or just intimidating somebody because you have this biotic aura.
Mm-hmm.
So coming up with rules that were not going to be game-breaking and make it just the obvious choice, that was part of the challenge, and it was actually the only classes that I came up with for the system, because everything else from the Edge of the Empire can so easily roll over to Mass Effect. Biotics were the only outlier, mm-hmm. and I felt like it was worth doing a separate biotic character tree compared to just bringing over the force powers, because there are some similarities, biotic throw, biotic pull versus force push,
mm-hmm.
and I felt like there's enough character in the biotic abilities to make their own trees. Such that you can be a vanguard and start teleporting into people and causing explosions with your mind and having a force field that protects you and your allies.
Force field.
Yes, I did see all of those. The trees again look like the Edge of the Empire, which makes it really easy to follow, like, what's happening. The biotics were the only career and specialization equivalents that I saw. Is there plans for more? Cause I know Edge of the Empire has a handful, like not half a dozen careers or something.
They have tons. The only thing when I first started the project, I was convinced to do one for all six of the Mass Effect classes you can select: soldier, infiltrator, and the rest.
Yeah. You currently have just the three that are biotic related, right?
Yeah. The Adept, the Vanguard, and the Sentinel. And I was sitting down thinking about it. Edge of the Empire has three or four different soldier variations. They don't need, mm-hmm. they didn't need another soldier that had some unique abilities like Adrenaline Rush or any other like soldier specific things from Mass Effect.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the Infiltrator and to a lesser extent the Sentinel, but the Sentinel did dabble in biotics, so I figured it needed its own class. So that was kind of the only difference.
Mm-hmm.
But for things that are accessible to Sentinels and Infiltrators and things like that, I wanted to put that in the equipment section so that if you wanted to play as an Infiltrator, well, Edge of the Empire actually has a stealth suit you can buy. It's ridiculously expensive.
Yeah.
If you're an Alliance Marine, you probably have access to top tech, or if you're a black market smuggler, then you'll probably find it eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Tech armor, another big thing in the Mass Effect universe, using your Omni-Tools to project a holographic barrier. In this system, it's an upgrade for armor. So you can make any of your armor, tech armor, if you buy it and activate it.
Okay. So then in this version, then not everybody would be a biotic, so they wouldn't all have a career or a specialization. They would be using other ways to get those.
Exactly. And it was kind of neat with the current group I'm playtesting it in, only one person's biotic.
And
oddly enough, it's the Elcor. So that's kind of
cool. Oh, gosh.
Awkward possibilities. But we have an Asari, who the Asari in the Mass Effect universe are naturally biotic.
Mm-hmm.
That person hasn't taken a biotic specialization. So
interesting.
It's going unused, but it's interesting to see how an Asari plays out without
it.
Biotic abilities.
Yeah. So tell me about the group that you're playtesting it with. What kind of characters do you have, and how's that going?
Well, it's the same group that I played the Star Wars campaign with.
Oh, okay.
And basically the DM and I switched positions. And so they're all real familiar with the system.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a fairly easy transition. It's just pointing out the differences as we come across them. And then some of the major combat and, I guess, differences that are between the two systems. But right now we have a Biotic Elcor, who's a Vanguard. So normally slow and lumbering, it can teleport long distances.
How convenient.
That's been a little awkward sometimes, but fun.
And he does the voice so well.
And that's a role-playing challenge, and I give him a lot of credit for it, is Elcor have to say how they're speaking prior to what they're speaking.
Oh, yeah. So
he does it perfectly. I don't know how he does it. He must practice in his off time.
I hope so. For people who are not familiar with Mass Effect, Elcor, they're really large aliens, right? They're the ones that they kind of walk around on all four legs, and they speak in this monotone. What is it? How do they infer?
Just, like, they say how they're feeling, like, with enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Thank you for showing up.
For other species, they have to explain what their tone is, but I guess they have other ways amongst themselves to differentiate.
Yeah, they apparently use some sort of pheromones or slight gestures to communicate subtleties.
That's fantastic.
Which other species can't. Handle.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of which, we also have in our party Hanar.
Hey.
And Hanar never refer to themselves as I. They always use this one.
Okay.
So it's kind of another interesting role-playing mechanic that has been used very effectively.
They're also supposed to be extremely polite, but this one has made the decision to be a complete bitch, honestly.
Nice.
But still refer to this one as the sun.
That's wonderful. Awesome. I ran into, I think, one Hanar in my playthrough so far, and they're the giant floating jellyfish ones.
Yeah.
It seemed to be a very evangelical Hanar. Is that normal for a Hanar?
It's the first exposure, I guess, most people have in the Mass Effect games is just they have to settle this disagreement between Hanar and a CSEC officer.
They wanted to enlighten me.
Yep, they're big on that.
Is that how you play yours, Kat? Is yours evangelical or
No, mine is basically Dahlia Royce from Suburgatory.
This is perfect.
And wears false eyelashes, because I decided that would be funny.
Do Hanar have eyes?
Nope.
Oh my god. Even better. So okay, so we have a Hanar, we have Elcor, who there's Asari, who does not have biotic powers. What do they do?
They have a Claymore shotgun, which is a very large shotgun that they saved all their money for. Fire it once, it pretty much evaporates any single target. But so far, the person's broken their arm once when they fire it.
Oh, gosh.
It's in the flavor text, what happens when you use it if you're not broken.
Okay.
We also have artificial intelligence on board, which has provided some interesting plot points because AIs are illegal in the Mass Effect universe. So he's incognito aboard their ship. They know he's a robot, but they're trying to keep that from other people. We also have a Quarian scoundrel type character.
Okay.
So very Han Solo-esque, but a much better mechanic. And he gets in trouble because as a Quarian, they don't have a lot of health. They're very vulnerable. They basically have a civilization that's on ships. so they don't have a lot of the same immunities that other civilizations have, so all their pressure suits protect them when they're not on board spaceships.
Oh, right. Yeah, I saw that. They and the Volus both have suits that, if breached, they're in trouble.
Yeah, the Volus are apparently from a very high-pressure planet, and I was reading in the Wikipedia that if they're exposed to an atmosphere that's not similar to this methane, high-pressure atmosphere, their skin just cracks open because it's no longer held together.
Horrifying.
Sounds terrible.
Yeah.
You don't want to happen. And the Orians just get very sick and a lot of very fatal infections if they're left untreated.
Has that been a problem yet for your Corian?
That's one of the one things I, or one of the few things I haven't put into the rules, and I've left to the GM's discretion about when the suit ruptures. Typically, our house rule is that if he suffers a critical hit, he takes a rupture.
Okay.
That hasn't happened a lot. It's only happened once when he went below his health points. He suffers a critical injury and goes unconscious. So that was the only time it's happened so far. Which for the Corians, they have very low health. So if they are too brave in combat, it's probably going to happen more often. Which he is. Previous campaign, Star Wars campaign, he basically played a mercenary with a giant gun.
And fell in love with it.
So he too frequently probably pretends to be gun again.
Yeah. It's a hard habit to shake. I will give him that.
Well, especially with this system where it's the more dice you roll, the more fun you're having.
Yeah.
So being able to play a giant gun and rolling the dice was a lot of fun. And it appealed to him.
It appeals to me, too. I get that. Oh, yeah. And they are very fun dice. Did you leave them all essentially the same?
Yep. There's no change. I figured that was a great mechanic. Just bring it over. The only thing the only dice I don't use for their intended purpose are the force dice.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
I really like the force point system that Star Wars had, where everyone rolls at the beginning and, how the force is affecting your team. And that was a challenge because I didn't want to make it just, Paragon Renegade. It's so easy. I could just relabel it Paragon Renegade.
Yeah.
And it doesn't quite make as much sense because unless the entire party is behaving like Paragons or behaving like Renegades.
Gotcha.
Kind of shoehorning them into something that doesn't make sense when the evil character is using Paragon points to make his rolls better. But I like the mechanic, so I just kept it, and that's the only thing those dice are used for now.
Oh, okay.
Initial force die pool, or however we change what they are called every session.
So no concrete name for those yet. But...
Not yet.
Okay.
Last time they were Destiny die for a while.
Yeah, they were Destiny die.
Okay, that's pretty good. Yeah, I guess there isn't... What would be the overarching cosmic fate of Mass Effect? I don't know, I haven't played enough of these games.
Well, let this one enlighten you.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what made the Paragon Renegade thing so appealing, is that in the RPG side of things, the more Paragon or the more Renegade you are, it opens up different dialogue options, different possibilities.
Mm.
So that is kind of the guiding force for a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
It only really works in a single-player setting, which it kind of breaks apart with a group.
Yeah, they tend to do their own things. And so, never what you want them to do.
Oh, absolutely not. That's part of the fun. Especially with the playtest. It's just like having an Elcor flying around. It really changes how you set up encounters. An Elcor can just teleport onto an enemy vehicle that's fleeing. Ha ha, this guy's going to live to be a permanent villain in your... Nope, there's a giant Elcor that just hit his car.
He just crushed it.
He just crushed it.
and in your system, Elcor can carry passengers, can't they? Aren't they like a half vehicle or something themselves?
Essentially vehicles. That was an interesting thing, was to make a player character that's also a vehicle. But the penalty is that they're no good at, dexterous things. Their agility is permanently reduced to one and can never be increased. Because they're lumbering, slow. Right. But even in the Mass Effect source file, lore, they fight by having giant guns put on their backs, and they have VIs, virtual intelligences, firing them, so the Elcor just walk around with, like, turrets on their back. That's how they wage war or fight if they have to.
Oh,
so
my
that's
gosh.
How we wage war.
And now that's how they wage war. They teleport a gun somewhere and shoot people.
That's amazing. Okay, so how else have your playtesters broken your game? Or have they?
They really haven't. Just having the more mobility for the Elcor, that's been an interesting problem, but it's kind of, as a GM, forced me to come up with encounters that aren't sort of tailored to a specific flaw in the party.
Mm-hmm.
So I would do Pathfinder GMing. I'd be like, okay, this is a party has such a setup. Let me provide them with a challenge that hits them where they're weak and see how they overcome it.
Mm-hmm.
With this, mobility can't be one of those things that I hinder the party with. So it's forced me to come up with new ways to kind of create a challenge for them, which has been pretty interesting. Because also vehicle-scale weapons pretty much one-shot anyone because they're much larger.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't just rely on a single tough villain, because even if he has pretty much all the hit points in the universe, you get shot by an anti-starship weapon, you're going to explode.
Yeah.
Or in the Mass Effect universe, well, in the Edge of the Empire universe, losing all your hit points doesn't kill you. It just, you go unconscious, which is one of the greatest things I think has ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not guaranteed to die, which gives players something to actually fight for if people go down. They can recover their friends or allies, and this is just a little piece of that system that I thought was well done, I wanted to keep.
And you mentioned you guys play an Edge of the Empire game.
Yeah.
You just play in that one? You don't DM that game, right?
No, the Elcor is the DM of that one.
Oh, okay. So
he's just getting back at me for things I've done in that campaign.
Probably.
Because I played a smuggler who was really good at lying to people. And
nice.
Pretty much got what I wanted every time a check came up. Something dice at it. But we kind of put that game away just because it, like a lot of good campaigns, mm-hmm. Power Creep got to the point where we had so much money, so many resources, we were so strong that unless they were throwing Star Destroyers at us by the dozen, our ship was handling it. But I think every system kind of reaches that where the player characters go beyond any reasonable challenge.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but that's when you retire it and you start again.
Start something else, and that's fun. How has the system been now that you've been on both sides running it and playing it?
I have to keep track of a little more. When I was playing as a character, I knew exactly where my strengths and weaknesses were, and mm-hmm. I knew exactly what to expect with the roles I was making. I knew how to, like, get things in my favor. So as the GM now in that system, I'm exposed to a lot more of the variety, especially given all the different classes.
Yeah.
So that's been a little different.
How about you, Kat? You've played both the Edge of the Empire and now this Mass Effect version. Is there anything noticeably different that comes to mind that's interesting, or
a couple things. Player? Yeah, I think the first thing would be that I was much more aware of how the universe worked in general in Star Wars, and also I played that before
mm-hmm.
As the same. I was a Bothan, obviously, and I played as a Bothan in a previous campaign, and I already was really well aware of it. So I think that was a crutch that I used that I didn't really think about. And now playing in this one, I don't know as much about the Mass Effect universe, mm-hmm. and I certainly don't know as much about Hanar as I did about Bothans. So trying to figure out what my character can't do in relation to what's already set up about Hanar in that universe,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's required me to do some more research and to ask a lot of questions and feel a little stupid sometimes, but that's all part of learning. And I think the other big difference for me personally has been just having a different DM.
Mm-hmm.
Richard and our other friend, they DM very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been interesting to notice those differences. I've played as Richard being a DM before and with a different system. So it's just really interesting seeing how he does it in this way. And also being confused in other ways. it's harder, basically, but I'm enjoying it a lot, so.
And without favoritism.
And without, no, he never,
yeah.
Gosh, even when he was my boss at the movies, he didn't show favoritism. He still cleaned up vomit then, too, and it's about the same now, so, yeah.
Aww.
Which, I prefer it that way. I prefer the challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you say that, you know, as a Mass Effect novice, more or less, that this is still a game that you can play? Like, it's still fun if you're not super neck deep in the lore of it, you know?
I think so. I think not being as attached to it from, like, a nostalgic standpoint,
mm-hmm.
it's made it a little bit tougher to stay in character during certain sequences where I just have mm-hmm. to go, okay, stop. I need to know how this is supposed to work because I literally don't know. But I still think people can play it. It just takes a little bit more time and research on your own part in developing a character and doing a little research and reading the Wikipedia articles and,
mm-hmm.
you know, being okay with a learning curve. But I still think it's very playable for other people. And I hope that that other people can get an opportunity to play it at some point once we've tweaked it and
yeah.
credited people where credit is due. And yeah.
So what about the rest of your playtesting group? Are they Mass Effect players or novices, or what's the makeup there?
The Quarian is not. He's the only one other than Kat who has not played Mass Effect.
Okay.
And as soon as he read about the Quarians and their pilgrimage and some of the background information, he just fell in love with them and wanted to play it. So he's in a similar situation with Catherine, but he loves doing Wikipedia research, so he just dives into that. He comes up to me, he's like, I found out something I want to do for my pilgrimage, and I found my ship name. And I'm like,
oh.
I did not bring up the ship names, but that is a good point. Yes, we need to figure out your ship name for your character.
Because
he's notoriously bad at coming up with background.
Yeah.
Which has actually been really awesome that he's with this new system, and I guess this new universe he had no prior knowledge of. He's really taken a shine to it and finally has a character with some background more than I shoot gun.
Yeah. Very cool. So
he's also like obsessed with reading the rules, so.
And he is also a min-maxer. So
oh, boy.
I rely on him to point out kind of like where things might be too powerful, or combos might be infinite or broken,
mm-hmm.
such as they can be in a tabletop.
Very cool.
So not having that personal connection to it actually, I think, has made it really good. I think that he's been able to approach it not from a nostalgic standpoint, but from a strictly... this is the best thing ever. Why is this the best thing ever? Is there a corollary to the video game as to why this should be the best thing ever?
Nice. I have a couple user questions.
All right.
We've got one from Tumblr user Shark Jacobs, which is incredible.
Sweet.
Who would like to know, romance and relationships are a major part of the Mass Effect video game. So how do you handle that in the tabletop system? Do you try to give it some kind of mechanical component, or just let it role play, or do you even touch it at all?
It would be up to the players if they wanted to touch it. Yeah. Awkward. A relationship is an interaction between two people. If two player characters want to engage in it, then it's probably real easy because they don't have to roll for it or try to do any charm or persuasion sort of mm-hmm. things. But if a character wanted to do it to an NPC, I assume it would fall under one of the abilities. Or, as a GM, if something felt more appropriate, we'd come up with it on the spot. I certainly wouldn't shy away from it, but kind of, I don't know if how other people's groups are.
Mm-hmm.
I know the group we're in. Relationships between characters hasn't really been a thing that's come up. It's not usually a part of anyone's backstory or doesn't usually happen during a campaign, so... from personal experience, I don't have any. But I don't think it's an issue that we would shy away from or that the system prohibits in any way.
Yeah, I know Edge of the Empire, like the mechanics doesn't really build that in, whereas some other types of role-playing game systems do. They have that sort of thing built in from the get-go. You're building relationships with other characters. So coming from that source material, it definitely makes sense and that kind of play style. And there's always possibilities out there since everyone has apparently made a Mass Effect version out of everything else. They should go do one of the relationship tabletop games.
Yeah.
And then you can play the romance sim or the dating sim the whole time. That's why we play BioWare games to begin with.
Exactly.
Yep.
Dragon Age Bachelorette.
Yeah. Oh my god, Dragon
Age. Oh my gosh.
So good. Who's your Dragon Age husband / wife?
Myself or Catherine?
Both of you.
The eyeball.
Oh my god, yes.
Only I that was honestly because I saw how much fun you were having. I have to see why. But I was really sad that I couldn't romance Cole.
Oh, he's cute.
He's my favorite.
Yeah. Has the statute of limitations lifted on trespasser spoilers yet? Have you played the trespasser DLC?
Know. We'll talk about that personally.
Okay, all right. Stuff, Cole things. And
oh, Cole
possible
things.
Cole things.
Oh, boy.
How about you, Richard?
Also
the Iron Bull?
No, not with the Iron Bull this time. Previous playthrough, I role-played a Sister of Battle from Warhammer. I'm a big fan of Warhammer Universe.
Mm.
And I ended up dating Cullen, because as a Knight Templar, he aligns with the Emperor's divine will.
Of course.
My second playthrough, I'm playing as Thanos, so a hornless canary who's a wizard, and I'm going to be Cassandra, hopefully.
Please do. She's so great. Oh, and that reminds me. When I was looking for other Mass Effect games, apparently there are some rules for Warhammer.
Excellent.
I'll have to send those your way.
I played the Warhammer, I guess... it was a fantasy setting where you didn't get to choose your starting class. You mm-hmm. randomly determined if you were a rat catcher or a butcher or a candlestick maker, and then you had to go fight orcs. And it was really awkward that they would have these low-level peasants fighting orc war bosses, but the system was unforgiving and everyone died at the end.
Oh, no.
But it was a lot of fun.
Good. That's important. It's important that you have fun dying.
That's what I tell my players.
Yeah. All right. So we've got some from Twitter also. Our friend Party of One podcast is curious to know, when dealing with converting a setting to a system like Edge of the Empire that uses credits, how do you go about balancing costs for gear? Or to put it another way, how do you decide what a Mass Effect blaster costs in Edge of the Empire?
For most things, it's a pretty even one-to-one. Credits, actually, they use the same terminology.
Yeah.
Credits are used in both settings. And so that was also really easy, is there's already an established kind of comparison between items, like a blaster versus a heavy blaster has a set cost in Star Wars, that delta. So it only became an issue when I was custom making items, because I wanted some of the more flavorful, more unique items in the Mass Effect universe to be represented.
Mm-hmm.
So from that standpoint, realizing that in the game, certainly this Black Widow sniper rifle, one of the best sniper rifles in the game, it's only sold, you know, at the Citadel, it's great, it's awesome, it's 1.2 million credits, which is the size of an 80-person spaceship. Like, that doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
I looked at items that had similar rarity in the Star Wars system, a certain lore behind them in the Star Wars system, the stats that were given to them compared to items in the Star Wars system that had similar stats, and went with my gut a little bit on a couple of them, but that was how I established the cost. It was more of a comparison to items of a similar rarity and function in the Star Wars universe. Cool. For things like Omni-Tools, those don't exist in the Star Wars universe at all. So I had to take the rules that Omni-Tools follow, see what things in the Star Wars universe had similar rules, costs of those, and weigh the versatility of an Omni-Tool versus the individual cost of carrying around a bunch of other things. Kind of came up with a number that my gut told me was good. So far, players haven't complained about the expense of an item, so I think that's a good sign. But
yeah.
I don't think they'd tell me if it was too cheap, so I have to be worried about that.
True, but if they end up walking around with too much stuff, then
yeah,
I think you'd notice. Yeah. So did you go through, you're trying to like convert as many of like the Mass Effect weapons and things like that as possible? Because I like my limited playthrough, I've noticed there's a lot of stuff.
There's tons. And I think the counts as approach is pretty much what I've taken to. A blaster pistol is a blaster pistol. And in the Mass Effect universe, while there are a wide variety of blaster pistols, I'm sure there's hundreds more behind the scenes, like even in the real world. Like, you can talk about a pistol, but there's hundreds of gun manufacturers, each with their own unique sort of designs, changes, things like that. So, much like in the Star Wars universe, where that's also a thing, I mean, you have your main companies, you have your main manufacturers, but a light blaster pistol is a light blaster pistol is a light blaster pistol. Whether it's a katana, which is actually a shotgun in the Mass Effect universe, whatever the Mass Effect pistol you want to call it.
Yeah.
You just follow the same rules and price, and as a Star Wars example, because it's been established, and it's real easy for our group to roll from, oh yeah, I remember this gun was a really good gun. I want to get that in the system. I'll call it, you know, XYZ.
Cool. So like all the company and manufacturing stuff, that's just flavor. That's just cool. Yeah, I noticed you've got a page or two of the manufacturers.
Yeah.
And their information. That's very cool.
It's a little out of place because, again, there's no actual game implication other than providing some more fluff.
Yeah, it's
fun.
But I
wanted that to be part of that counts as approach. You could say, oh, I like this manufacturer. What is this? Batarian State Arms. Well, cool. My pistol is now a Batarian State Arms heavy blaster pistol.
Yeah.
Just kind of give people a little bit more of the lore to get involved with.
And I imagine, do you do armor similarly? Or
Armor is all the same, yeah.
Cool.
I didn't add any custom armor because across the Edge of the Empire and the Splat books, there was pretty much, they covered all the different types of armor you can get, and they had a pretty good job of covering it. And unlike the weapons, which are pretty characterful and have a more dynamic interaction, there weren't as many special armors in the Mass Effect universe that needed to be brought over and have unique rules, except for tech armor, which
yeah. Our friend James and the Meltdowns on Twitter kind of piggybacked off of that and is curious about points for abilities. In this sort of system is, you know, should force push cost the same as biotics throw? How do you do that?
With the Star Wars system, and actually a friend of mine who played with the Star Wars campaign, they talked about just kind of like the limitations of a tree structure for when it came down to abilities. Like, you have to buy abilities that cost less before you get to abilities that cost more.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to keep that structure because even though it's got its pros and cons, I didn't want to vary too much with that because I thought it was effective in the setting. For the biotic abilities, I did have to make some choices about which ones were earlier in the tree, therefore cheaper to buy point-wise or experience-wise, versus ones at the bottom. And so I looked at the way Edge of the Empire did it, where towards the bottom of the trees, you have the special effects, things that bring in a lot of custom rules to the abilities that are earlier.
Okay.
And so with Mass Effect, you can get Biotic Throw early on, but you don't get a very effective Biotic Throw until you leveled it up, you put more points into it. So with that, Biotic Throw is closer to the start of the tree, easy to buy, but you don't get the effective Biotic Throw until a couple of levels down the tree. And so that was the approach with it.
Very cool. As a game master, what kind of stories do you like to tell when you play RPGs?
I'm a dungeon designer. I love, when I would play Pathfinder or D&D, I love coming up with very clever, hard-to-describe dungeons, which adds to a lot of confusion and high emotions and fatalities.
Drawings.
And a lot of drawings.
Require of you.
And schematics and things like that.
Oh, yeah, Richard is also an artist.
So I like that kind of crafting element and then seeing how the players react to it. In Mass Effect, it's a little harder because you don't have as many mad scientists running around building these convoluted strongholds that you can't just bombard from orbit if you want to. There are some limitations, so things have to be a little more cliche, I guess, sci-fi stories. So I do look to a lot of cliches for sci-fi. Oh, you have this, you know, evil alien death ray you have to stop, and even though all the alien races are known, and you could go through it politically, or you could just, you know, leave a spaceship in there and blow it up. options, because players don't want to railroad the players by any means. So I do actually look to a lot of, like, sci-fi literature and some more vague sources that people won't recognize immediately. Like, if I have a guy with an energy sword and black armor that wants to cut people's hands off, people are going to figure out where that comes from.
But
if I put them all on a spaceship cruise liner whose warp drive can't turn off, and the penalty for not shutting the ship down safely is that they're all of a sudden going to be 70 years in the future because of the way time and mass work. That's going to be, no one's going to think, oh, that's that one, you know, novel from this 50s sci-fi writer. Or this short story or movie probably coming out in a couple years. That's the way things go. So I look to a lot of that for inspiration. And then also a lot of the missions in the Mass Effect game. There's so many side quests that I know I've actually already used one in the campaign. I don't think no one called me out on it. But it's a mission that Shepard does in the game. And the names were changed.
Nice.
Settings were changed. But it still provided a good hook. It provided a good reward. It provided a good motivation. And
which one?
They're not telling.
So, oh no, we're going to be in the dark forever because we'll never play these games.
Now Catherine's going to expect it. I hope she doesn't tell everyone else. Now I'm going to have to burn that bridge. I can't use any more of those.
Oh, no.
But that... So I'm
going to can.
Change my style. Because I've never campaigned a sci-fi setting. Or never DM'd a sci-fi setting. I've always been able to use the classic fantasy tropes like, oh, there's a dragon or a king. Which, to be fair, those can be brought over pretty similarly. Oh, you have a planetary governor. Or you have a mystic alien being. It's a beast of some nature that flies through space breathing space fire. So...
I would believe it.
Yeah. And that's a great thing. Mass Effect, there's races that aren't even on the Citadel that the Mass Effect universe has that are talked about only in Codex entries. And as if you've played Dragon Age, you know how many Codex entries they like to put in those games.
Yes. If only I had the time to sit there and read them all, but...
Who does? I would buy a small light novel.
Just the Codex. Yeah. Same. I've looked for one.
That's a free money idea. I'm just throwing it out there.
BioWare, get on it.
BioWare.
Yeah.
Here you go.
I'm sure the writers of all that would be very grateful to have people actually spend the time to read it.
I would. It would be great. Yeah.
It's
think
how we had all the bard music played at our wedding.
Nice.
There you go, you amazing composers. Yep. You've been used for something other than background music. We love you for it. Thank you.
It's good music. Did you get the songs from the DLC?
Not the
instrumental yet, like the scores, which I need that, but the bard songs so far.
We found acoustic versions of the bard songs without lyrics.
Oh, cute.
Wonderful.
That's great.
Yeah.
unlike
it sounds
unlike
good.
In other campaigns we've played. made. I don't have anything to play on my phone whenever specific moments happen in this particular game.
Yeah.
Oh, are you the score?
Yeah, whenever we play the Star Wars one, we're in a bar, quick, gotta go get my cantina music. We play the Pokemon one, anytime my ice cream comes in anything, I'd play the Mr. Softy music from New York. You know.
Perfect. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mr. Softy's the best.
Oh, it's so good, and it's not even ice cream.
Yeah. Then that other guy's taking over all his spots now, though. I don't like him.
Jerk.
Yeah. Ugh. Gotta go out to, like, Jersey City to find Mr. Softy. Anyway. Well, thank you both so much for hanging out with me and talking about this game. And maybe in the future I'll be telling everybody where to go find it. But for now, have fun playing it.
Thank you.
We're doing it tonight.
Yeah, we're actually playing tonight.
We're
yeah.
We're there in about an hour.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So do you know what you're doing tonight, Kat? Do you know what you look?
I have no idea. I'll probably just stick more false eyelashes on my hand and see what happens.
Yeah.
She's also the doctor, so she'll have.
Oh my goodness.
With all my limbs.
Well, where are you in your story? What have you done so far?
Well, last session, I should probably put some background information. The session prior, mm-hmm. the entire party over the course of a four-hour evening passed one check.
Yep.
So they basically are like, oh, we're going to chase this bounty.
Yeah.
Let's get some more information about it. Okay, we know it's a guy. Okay, let's try to find information. Let's go to this employer. The employer backtracked your communication and found out that you were investigating the employee. They contacted you. Why are you investigating our employee?
Oh, no.
Just bad thing after bad thing.
Oh.
Yeah. We had an unlucky night.
But they eventually found a bounty that they could track down, and they chased this Krogan to a forest world where he was being hired by some mercenaries to help them clear out some native species.
But I really liked the native species, so I tried to save the native species and kind of screwed that one up.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Failing my checks.
Yeah. So I think I have to double check with the players because we play pretty late and alcohol's involved, so we're all a little fuzzy in the memory. But if I recall correctly, they had just loaded the Krogan that they needed alive after shooting him with a space laser.
Mm-hmm.
He was unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
At the edge of the Empire system. They loaded him into their vehicle and were about to drive away after critically wounding the leader of the mercenary company who they abducted the Krogan from while being chased by all the native species. Able to flack it.
They were cute. They looked like me.
Oh.
Like Hanar with legs.
Oh.
Legs. And then
that's adorable.
Shells. Which is actually great for a sci-fi setting. You can just make up creatures and it's like, oh yeah, native species to a planet. It wasn't worth mentioning in the last codexes, but it's there.
Yeah, the only problem with that, though, is that because I don't know anything about Mass Effect codexes, I was like, maybe this is an important creature because I don't know.
Perfect.
And so here I am trying to save them. And that's again, one of those things where if you don't have any, like, basis in the lore, it can be a little troublesome when you're not sure if something is important or not.
Yeah.
So I need to do more research myself.
Yeah.
So I don't keep doing crap.
Yeah. She's a tree hugger, like, with all of her tentacles. That's...
Are her trees insane?
Sure.
Well, in planets.
Yeah.
I don't know. Actually, space trees.
Oh my gosh,
are
space
cool.
trees.
Yeah.
Wait, wasn't there one in Sailor Moon?
There was one in Sailor Moon.
Yes, there was. Giant space tree.
Tarot card using children.
Which, you know, could totally show up in Mass Effect. Why not?
It's not a bad idea.
Oh, man.
But that's been something I've been enjoying. I run a Dragon Age game for people who most of them have played maybe part of a video game, but none of them are very familiar with the lore. So just anything I throw at them, they're never quite sure if it's like where the importance hits. You know, like, oh, shit, is this somebody that, like, I'm supposed to be aware of? Or, you know, is this a town I'm supposed to know? Or should I have not killed that guy? So it's very fun to mess with them as the GM.
Oh, y'all are evil.
Yeah.
That's the best part, is as much as a player playing the Star Wars game, knowing the Star Wars universe, I was able to metagame a little bit. I knew which species to talk to for certain things and all that. I like that absence of metagaming. It keeps the players honest, and I think a good role player takes that and runs with it, much like Catherine has.
Yeah.
I almost got us killed.
And that makes
it
exciting.
But you know what? It does make it for a really good game, and that's really the fun in it. Everyone in our campaign, for the most part, unless we're like, hold on, we need to stop and think about the rules here, we stay in character for the most part, and
especially
that makes it especially the Elcor.
That's so wonderful.
Doesn't matter how many he's had, he's still the Elcor. It's beautiful. But that's, I think, for me, what makes it the most fun, even when I'm screwing everything up. because it's becomes very real and fun in that way. The same way when you're playing a game, a video game, yeah. you can get very immersed, and this becomes mm-hmm. very immersive very quickly. Unlike
very cool.
video game where I'm just annoyed that I'm dying from shooting a gun the wrong way.
Yeah. yeah. There we go. So everyone else frustrated with the Mass Effect video game, play a Mass Effect tabletop RPG. It's way better.
Well, I did hit your target.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on the
Okay, maybe. So the two of you, if you wanted to be found online, where could people find you? Either one of you.
That's a good question.
Richard hides, probably.
He hides. You can find me, and I can tell him.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Bothans.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course. And I can relay any questions or info to him.
She'll send all the fan mail along.
Yeah, yes, I have an Instagram, will. Though.
He has an Instagram.
Oh.
Thanostradamus.
Oh, God. Okay, that'll be in the show notes. That's a thing I have to type now.
Welcome.
If you want to just take a picture of questions or comments yeah. and post them on Instagram, I'll see that picture.
Ah, perfect.
You can comment on Instagram. I never use it.
You can.
He also has a Tumblr, but doesn't use it.
Nope.
That's fair.
Pocket Monster Field Notes, where I post yeah. for him, terrifying versions of Pokemon that he has drawn.
They are beautiful nightmare fuel.
Unfortunately, I don't think you'd get any questions through to him there, but
that's okay.
contacting me or yeah. Instagram or yeah. through you, I imagine, since we're friends.
Yeah, I know you guys. That's fine.
You know where we live.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. You move around a lot.
It's true.
You do. All right. I think we've devolved enough successfully. So thank you both
thank
again.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's been fun.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
Kat and Richard and I actually kept talking for almost another hour, and while most of it was friend stuff, we did keep coming back to game thoughts, and this little bit that I couldn't quite sneak in earlier struck me as something really worth sharing.
Yeah, and it's actually kind of fun because we'll have people come by sometimes, like sometimes one time didn't Plant come over, and he was like, yeah. I want to play, and we just gave him Davey's character, we gave him someone who wasn't there, his character sheet,
mm-hmm.
and he got to, you know, like he's not really a tabletop gamer, he's not really a gamer much in general, but he came over and was able to play it, and, you know, we were able to explain it.
Cool.
I think that was during the Star Wars one, yeah. which is, I personally think, is so much easier to play for someone who doesn't have a lot of tabletop experience,
mm-hmm.
and who, like me, I'm dyslexic, and I have a really hard time with those numbers, doing them quickly, and it always bothered me that everyone would do all my counting for me, really, because they were like, oh, let's do it, and I know it was in kindness, and
yeah.
I know it was, like, a friendly thing, and it really was helpful. But because of that, I would never figure out exactly what those dice meant
yeah.
and, like, how they worked. And so I felt really stupid because I kept having to ask for help explaining things when it was easy numbers because I didn't know what I was using it for. Because they'd be like, oh, yeah, it passed. And I'm like,
but
oh,
why?
Good.
Yeah.
Excellent. I don't know why. Whereas this one's like, you have the little
good, bad.
Good, bad.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm like, cool. And I can't, I mean, it takes me a second because, again, dyslexic. I'm like, oh, these are moving around. But, like, It's doable.
Which I think is what I love most about the Edge of the Empire. So what I think is the coolest mechanic that Edge of the Empire did that I think changes the way that I approach, like, tabletop RPGs in general is the D20 systems and a lot of other systems that I don't even know about, but I know this is a failure in a lot of systems, is the very binary pass-fail mechanic.
Yeah.
Edge of the Empire offers so much granularity to that. You can succeed with disadvantage or fail with advantage, or you can triumph in the face of complete failure. And as a GM, it's very interesting that I get to take that and kind of use it to craft a story. And in Star Wars, they know it. They call it the cinematic experience of this dice roll. It's not that you're doing something specifically, it's just how it proceeds, how it acts. And having that system that's very simple, you just count the number of dice you have,
mm-hmm.
just roll this big pile of dice, figure out the delta between them, that, I fell in love with the system as soon as I saw it. That was the mechanic of it, and it had such a wild outcome. You still had your binary success, fail, advantage, disadvantage, but when you combine those two, and you can scale them by how many successes or how many disadvantages, things like that, it just became an amazing narrative mechanic, even for something as simple as acquiring a gun, or repairing a computer, or interacting with somebody. I thought that was amazing, and that's why I wanted to mod, I guess, that system more than any other system.
Thanks again to Richard and Kat for sharing their game and their experiences with us. Kat is currently starring in a production of Ring of Fire out on the West Coast, but any encouraging messages you have for Richard will undoubtedly be passed along to him. I know that I am not alone in wanting to play this game, so if you send any to me, I will let him know. Lastly, I'll be at Dreamation next weekend in Morristown, New Jersey, so let's hang out and play some games. I'd love to hear what you've been playing, what you've been making and working on, and about what you'd like to hear on the show. I'm also very much up for continuing this Dragon Age boyfriend conversation. I hope to see you there. Keep up with Modifier at our headquarters, modifierpodcast.tumblr.com. We're also on Twitter at Modifier Podcast, and don't forget we're taking your legal questions about the open gaming license. Please understand that while we are going to have a real-life lawyer on the show, this isn't binding legal advice and it doesn't count as a client-attorney relationship. He is a cool friend doing us a cool favor, so let's make this a good experience. You can send those questions, other questions, comments, suggestions, contributions, whatever you've got, to modifierpodcast@gmail.com. Modifier is proud to be part of the One Shot Podcast Network, an amazing family of role-playing podcasts that includes shows like Campaign, a Star Wars radio drama actual play that uses the Edge of the Empire system to tell the story of the best space family you are ever going to meet. Find out more at oneshotpodcast.com. Modifier's theme music was created by my favorite Bothan, Kat Greenfield, whose myriad talents are on display at katgreenfield.com. Next time on Modifier, Cheyenne Wall Grimes reveals the secret world of laser kittens. See you then!